This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Some of you lucky people got to take a snow day yesterday. And some smaller subset of you got to sit down with a cup of tea or a mug of hot chocolate and a lovely wool throw in a corner by the window where you could watch the snowfall while a fire crackled nearby. At least, that's how I imagine other people's snow days went. It's exactly how it works, right? Well, at least I can have vicarious fantasies. I bring up that daydream by way of introducing our topic for today, winter reading. We want to hear what books you've had on your list, which ones you're writing about on Goodreads, gifting to your friends, and talking about with your family. And actually, speaking of fantasies, this is a safe space to tell us what kind of fantasy fiction you're reading, or romance novels. Hey, it's Valentine's Day. We have two great guests to help guide us today. Star Latronica is library director at Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. Amy Howlett is library director at Springfield Town Library, and they are both going to share some of their favorite books. Star and Amy, nice to have you on the program.
Thanks so much, Jane, for having us.
So also, listeners, we do want yours. I said it's a safe space. You can tell us whatever you're reading. And really, we do want to hear everything, because this is one of my favorite things about the book show is that there's so much fun and so many interesting things. And people have so many different interests. So the book show is a great way to get new titles and to learn about what our friends and neighbors are reading. You can share yours by going to the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Post-it note there. You can read what other readers are reading, or you can call 1-800-639-2211. That number again is 1-800-639-2211. Star, is there any such thing as winter reading as opposed to any other type of reading?
I think there is. I know for myself and in chatting with colleagues and library patrons about being on the show, everybody indicated that they tend to tackle a longer, more complicated book in the winter because you have those long nights, like you said, you have the wool throw, you have the crackling fire, and we just have a more time in our life, I think, during the winter, because even though, you know, you could go out and snowshoe and ski, there's just plenty of time to hunker down and cuddle up and read a good book. And that's
more darkness, at least.
Absolutely.
So is that true for you, Star? You actually do read longer books in the wintertime?
I actually do. Yeah, I tend to be a lot more frivolous during the summer. But on the other hand, I also go to the funny books in the winter because sometimes you just need a lift out of all that frigidity. And you need something that's going to really make you laugh and make you sparkle as much as the snow outside sparkles.
All right, give me one of those. Do you have a good recommendation for a book that will make you sparkle?
I do. So I do tend towards memoir, and especially funny memoir. And one of my favorites is Fiction Ruined My Family. So, of course, I was drawn to that by the title, being a librarian and all. And indeed, it's written by Jeannie Darst, and fiction did pretty much undo her family. Her father was a frustrated novelist, but she tells it with such wit that it just makes you fall off the couch laughing. Even though there are some really harrowing points in her books, in her book, that she really, if told with a darker touch or a heavier touch, you would just cringe. But with her, you laugh so hard along with her. And I gave the book to a friend of mine in her late 80s, and she emailed me, 6 months after the first time she'd read it, and she said, you know, I was feeling so depressed, and then I got out that book and I read the scene with the black plastic bags, and I was just laughing myself silly. So that's one of mine. The other ones that I might recommend are the memoirs and short pieces by Jenny Lawson, Let's Pretend This Never Happened, and Furiously Happy.
I have to say, my writing jealousy is people who can write difficult times with humor. I feel like I am way too earnest of a person, and I am so jealous and impressed by people who can write dark things with humor that can give you a little bit of a sort of a knowing smile or make you feel like you're with the person through their tragedies and travails and the funny times. That's so great. I love those ideas.
Yeah, it really makes the unbearable actually enjoyable. It's remarkable.
And don't we all need that, really?
We really do.
Amy, what about for you? What do you think about the concept of winter reading?
Well, I'm not sure I'm as organized as Star is. You read year round, and but what you said resonates with me. I do love a funny book. I do dread the oncoming darkness, and now that it's February, I'm so enjoying that it's daylight at 5:20.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and the sun is coming up earlier. But I think I also love humor and. I'm thinking not so much of memoir, but there's a novel that has just been such a great accompaniment for me. It's Ian McEwan's Nutshell, which is a riff on Hamlet. So if you can imagine Hamlet not being born yet in his mother's womb, listening to his mother and his uncle plot his father's death. Is that a great idea?
Yes.
It's fabulous.
And well executed?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, the funny thing is we do know a lot about unborn babies. And, you know, they taste, they have emotions, they have dreams, they have fingernails. But this unborn child seems more like a young man of 25 or 30. He's very erudite. Of course, his mother does listen to a lot of public radio podcasts, you know, so we expect, but has a very fine taste for wine also. He
the baby does? The
yes,
fetus does?
Yes, because his mother drinks, so he would know. I love the voice. It's a fabulous audiobook, you know, if you like to travel and listen. And McEwan just never disappoints me.
No
He's
kidding.
He's great.
I adore Ian McEwan. I will read anything that man writes. I just think he's a wonderful writer. So the fact that he can sort of re-envision Hamlet to me sounds like an ideal book.
And it's not overdone either. You know, you shouldn't be rolling your eyes and thinking, mm-hmm. oh man, Shakespeare, I thought I left that behind. I mean, you can enjoy this book and never think of Hamlet at all. It's just, it'll keep impinging, you know, Bound in a Nutshell, Gertrude, Uncle Claude. You'll keep thinking, oh God, that is Hamlet, isn't it?
So should you reread Hamlet first or maybe read Hamlet for the first time first?
Oh, don't make this into a homework assignment. No, no. Just enjoy it.
All right. No homework here. It's a homework-free zone. You can call us with your book recommendations. What is actually really giving you pleasure? Or maybe it is not quite homework, but something that you feel like is educating you and that you think would be of value to other people. Fiction, nonfiction, fantasy, sci-fi, kids' books. We're going to talk about all of it. We need your help. 1-800-639-2211. Again, 1-800-639-2211. Or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Let's go to Craig, who's calling in from Ferrisburg. Hi, Craig. What are you reading?
Hi. I just finished Bertrand Russell's Proposed Roads to Freedom. And Bertrand Russell, of course, the famous English philosopher and mathematician, right after the First World War, he wrote kind of a political treatise on how to shoot humanity moving forward towards a brighter future, how that society might be organized. So not only does it give you a bit of hope, but it's written very well in his sort of famous style. And I think a lot of folks really enjoyed in that educational vein that you were just talking about. The Proposed Roads to Freedom by Bertrand Russell, I highly recommend it, and it's not too long.
Craig, thank you. That's a great recommendation. Amy and Star and I are in three different studios, so I couldn't tell which one of you it was, but one of you let out an audible when you heard Bertrand Russell. Who was it? Oh, neither of you are going to cop to it, huh? All right, we'll move on, but I like that suggestion, Craig. Thank you. And here's Chris in Richmond. Hi, Chris. Go ahead.
Hey, Jane. Thanks for taking the call. A good friend lent me a book that he received for Christmas. It's called The Sparrow. It's not a new book, but it was new to him. I believe it's reaching its 20th year anniversary. Phenomenal book. I couldn't put it down, and then my wife took it, and she said it was truly a remarkable book. It more or less takes the Jesuit hierarchy in Rome with the discovery of an alien culture, puts them in space, sends them out there, takes the Catholic Jesuit culture and applies it to a foreign species, and it doesn't work out very well. And you get both the end of the book and the current time at the same time. So the book bounces back and forth to what had happened, what is happening.
Chris, what a great recommendation. And our producers are remembering that The Sparrow has come up in other book shows, too. So you are not alone among people who really enjoy that book. Thank you for telling us about it. Nichol is on the line from Guilford. Hi, Nichol. Nice to talk with you again.
Hi. First, I want to say hi to Star. This is Nichol from the library.
Hi, Nichol.
Hello. All right. Since this is the book show, I wanted to mention a couple books about language. The first is a book about English grammar. And I want to be clear, when I say grammar, I don't mean like a style guide or one of those books that give you lists of usage rules. Instead, I mean a book about the actual grammar, about like the innards of English and how it actually works as a language. Rodney Huddleston and Jeffrey Polham are editors for the Cambridge Grammar of English Language, and they've written a companion book called A Student's Introduction to English Grammar. It's a bit more like a textbook, but it's very readable with just lots of amazing information. I got this last Father's Day, and I've been recommending it to anyone I know who might be interested in these sorts of things. And the quick mention of a couple, two new books by one of my favorite authors, the linguist John McWhorter. Last fall, he published a book called Words on the Street. Now, we all like to think of like the language we use as being unchanging, and anything else is basically sort of an error. But the point of his book is about how it's actually the nature of all languages to be constantly changing, and sometimes on even really short notices, short scales. And his newest book came out about a month ago. It's called Talking Back, Talking Black. It's about the structure and history of American Black English. Again, good stuff. So anyway, I'll stop. And Jane, as always, I just want to thank you for doing these shows. I always really look forward to them.
Oh, Nichol, thanks. I appreciate that. And so do I. I, as a parent of two very small children, feel like I don't ever have time to read anymore. And so these shows are sort of an exquisite, painful experience for me because so many books that I would love to be reading and then all of the guilt involved in not reading them. So I'm with you, Nichol, on the fun of these shows. And I would just love to suggest that you check out our podcast for kids that I host called But Why, because we actually interviewed John McWhorter in the podcast and he answered a kid's question about who invented words. So if you are a word connoisseur like Nichol, you might enjoy that episode of the podcast. Star, I'd love to get another recommendation from you for a great read.
So Amy put me in mind. It's mentioning that we are seeing longer days, ever so slightly, and moving towards spring. And also, she mentioned The Voice. And to me, voice is one of the things I read for, voice and character. And there's a wonderful book called Home to Wofield by Susan Chuby. And it's about a young Brooklynite who inherits a hardscrabble farm from her never-known uncle in, it happens to be in Canada. It could have been in Vermont just as easily. But it's told through the voices of four characters. Again, hysterically funny. One of the characters is the wizened old farmhand who is just annoyed at everybody. One is Prudence herself, who inherits the farm and is hapless. An 11-year-old girl who is raising prize chickens, and her rooster's name is Alec Baldwin. It really doesn't get any funnier than that. And then a misfit high school student who had something terrible happen to him at high school. We don't know what, for a long time, but he hasn't been back to school since and spends a lot of time drinking and playing video games. Now, this doesn't sound uplifting, but it is. It's absolutely a riot. And even though it's told through these four voices, there are lots of really fantastic peripheral characters that float in and out. And really, even just the scene of Prudence's first foray into the farmer's market is again, you know, laugh out loud funny and worth the trip to take with her. Every time I go to the farmer's market, I always think of Prudence there with her half a dozen radishes. So,
and so remind us of the title. What's it called again?
Home to Wofield.
And it's Susan Juby.
Yeah, J-U-B-Y.
Okay, okay, that sounds excellent. Amy, keep us on a roll here. Another read from you.
Well, I'm going to take up your invitation at the beginning of the show to go to that safe place and talk about romance. So I love romance, and a lot of our readers love it too. And I don't know whether it's the political times or just the longing for a happy ending, but I'm going to talk about The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Orczy. So published in the early 1900s, I think 1905, 1907, one of the first of the unknown hero books, the man who seems so ordinary in day life. Sir Percy Blakeney, kind of foppish, you know, those Anglophile heroes with their lace dripping out of their handcuffs. And he is secretly, of course, rescuing people from the guillotine in France. And his silly wife doesn't even know what's going on. I love The Scarlet Pimpernel. I am so happy that after all these years, people are still going back to it and back to Gone with the Wind, Georgette Heyer, and the modern novelists also, Nora Roberts, Suzanne Elizabeth Phillips. These people circulate like crazy. And we have people coming in and asking for them by the armload. So let's hear it for The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Yeah, let's hear it. I haven't read The Scarlet Pimpernel, and now you're making me feel like I should.
Well, the Batman, the Shadow, all those people that have one existence by day and another by night.
All right, listeners, come on, take up the invitation. What bodice ripper are you reading? You can call in 1-800-639-2211. You know, we don't know if you use your real name or not, to be honest, so you don't even have to reveal your identity. Again, 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. It's Valentine's Day, so if you have any special romantic reads, we would really like to hear them. Steamy plots, sweet romance, we love all the love, we don't discriminate. You can share those books or other reading recommendations on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. It's our winter reading show today. Ellen says, I have been absolutely going crazy over Nnedi Okorafor's Binti series. I strongly recommend them for anyone who likes sci-fi. Lisa says, our group, Reader's Delight, is reading a book by award-winning fantasy author Patricia A. McKillop called The Tower at Stony Wood. We wanted an escape from unpredictable dramas of daily news, and we found a parable for our times, fears, and a clue to where courage can be found. Again, that's called The Tower at Stony Wood. Diane says, I would like to highly recommend Isabel Wilkerson's The Warmth of Other Suns, the epic story of America's Great Migration. I found it to be one of the most compelling books I have ever read, tracing the true and often difficult stories of three people and their families. I wanted to see how their stories turned out and hopefully how our country transformed over way too much time to a place of greater fairness. And Teo says, a timely book to read this Vermont winter is It Can't Happen Here by Sinclair Lewis. Written in my hometown of Barnard in the summer of 35, Lewis's fictional account of the election of a fascist dictator was partly inspired by the work of Lewis's wife, Dorothy Thompson, known as the First Lady of American Journalism. It Can't Happen Here isn't a light read, but it is written in an often humorous, satirical tone, and the protagonist, Doremus Jessup, a journalist, is an inspirational figure who doesn't bend in the face of an authoritarian crackdown on the press. Great recommendations there. Add yours to the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. We're talking today with Amy Howlett, Library Director at Springfield Town Library, and Star Latronica, Library Director at Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. Any of those books really resonate for you, Amy? Have you read any of those?
I haven't. I keep hearing about The Warmth of Other Suns. I think that has to go on my bedside table right now. I've been amused in the last week to watch 1984 climbing up the bestseller lists, that classic by George Orwell. We have two copies at the Springfield Town Library, and both of them are out.
Oh, really?
The other book people seem to be reading, I heard it talked about a lot right after the election, and they're asking for it, and we're actually putting together a list of them, a group of them for book clubs, is Hillbilly Elegy by J.D. Vance, another book I haven't read yet, but I know I've got to pretty soon. Story of a young man growing up in hillbilly territory and making sense of that population that came out and voted for Donald Trump. apparently a really thoughtful read.
Hmm. Star, are you finding that people are trying to pick up books that give them a greater understanding of America or of our current political sphere?
Absolutely. That's probably the most requested type of book we're seeing right now. And we actually have several displays around the library that are neutral in that they don't choose political sides, of course, but just hope to provide some insight into what's happening, into this transition. And actually, I was especially proud of our children's room, who put together a wonderful display of the seven countries that were included in the executive order. And again, not with any opinion, but here's a chance for people to learn more about those countries that are now been thrust into the news even more than they were before.
So when you say that people are you know, sort of trying to find something that speaks to them in these uncertain times, do you find that people are more often asking for a perspective that's different from theirs? So it may be, you know, a work of fiction or a perspective on somebody whose life is different? Or are people leaning more towards those sort of civics and history and nonfiction books, Star?
I would say that we are encountering both, but it is very much about learning about the civics, as you said, and looking at other examples in history where there's been an unexpected upheaval, and you know how that played out. And so I think people are looking for reassurance, and people are looking for perhaps a course of action, and people are looking for inspiration.
Amy, same in Springfield?
I'm thinking that we don't have those conversations at the desk as much. I think every community is different. Every library is different. And, of course, there's a wonderful interplay. We put the books out, but we don't go there unless people invite us to. So I have a feeling that what you're talking about, Star, might be a particular wonderful aspect of Brattleboro.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than somebody who's sort of looking over your shoulder while you're reading and nosing around like, oh, what's that book about? Why are you reading that? I mean, unless you're inviting that kind of activity, I find the nosy readers are not the most fun. Caitlin says, my top three from 2016, Homegoing by Yah Jesse, a really well-crafted and powerful set of stories following several generations in and out of Africa. The Inugami Mochi by Jessamine Smith, about the relationship between a woman and her dog, but not like you've seen before. If you've ever really loved an animal, you have to read it. And Beasts and Children by Amy Parker, about identity and family and all the ways it can go wrong and some of the ways it can redeem itself. Shannon also says Homegoing is excellent. I also just finished Born a Crime by Trevor Noah. It's a fascinating read about South Africa at the end of apartheid. I just reread Jane Austen's six novels as well, since I'm home with a new baby. They never get old, she says. And Sharon says The Event That Changed Everything, a novel about cooks, chefs, restaurant life, farming, relationships, and environmental consciousness. And that's all the title. It's by Paul Sorgel, which Shannon adds is a great read. Now, I asked for some romance, people looking at those bodice rippers, and we have Jessica on the line with us from Brattleboro. Jessica, I think you can deliver on this, right?
Hi there. Yes, I think I can. I think part of what's kind of going on in the world of writing and editing, which I'm a part of, is that more people are writing romance novels. And I think it's been providing a really interesting form of escapism for folks. And I'm wondering if Star maybe is able to see that as well.
Star, are you?
Absolutely. People are just writing more, I think. But yes, people are. People may have been writing romances all these years, but they just weren't talking about it. But absolutely. And I think that writing does happen more frequently during the winter, because you have that opportunity to be introspective and to try your hand at after you've read a good book. You know, maybe you want to write something about the book or just something that you were moved by. And it reminds me of this novella that was, oh gosh, probably 10 years ago by Alan Bennett, called An Uncommon Reader, about Queen Elizabeth the bookmobile had pulled up behind Buckingham Palace, and her corgis got loose and ran on the bookmobile. So just out of obligation, she checked out some books, and she started to read. And then she got hooked on reading because reading made her softer. And so then she started to write, and writing made her firmer in her thoughts. And so and I think of that in the winter. I think people are more likely to turn their hand to writing. But yes, absolutely. And there are whole internet communities where people share their romance writing.
Jessica, what is it for you? What really draws you to writing romance?
I think part of what draws it for me is actually the opportunity to take what's a little formulaic and play with it a little bit. I think readers are obviously primarily women who read romance, but I think we're also hungry for really strong female characters in our novels. And for me, that's a lot of fun to get to play with that trope a little bit. I like to write, if my female main character in the novel I'm writing now is an entrepreneur and has started her own lingerie store and is dealing with the IRS. And so she has to be really smart and really engaging. But it's a lot of fun to kind of step away from it having to make some kind of really heavy point.
Yeah. Is there anywhere we can read your work? Jessica, you can put a plug in for yourself if you'd like.
Oh, thank you. I'm actually still in the process of working on it. I'm hoping to release it this spring under my own imprint, which would be Swift Ink Books.
Oh, good. We'll look for it. And, in our summer reading show, you can call us back and let us know how it wrapped up. Jessica, thank you for calling in. I really appreciate that. Let's go.
And bring a copy by the library.
Ooh, yeah. Jessica's in Brattleboro.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. There we go. Dorothy's calling in from Johnson. Hi, Dorothy. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep. We got you loud and clear.
Okay. First, I wanted to follow up on the caller who talked about Sparrow, Mary Doria Russell's book. There's a sequel, Children of God, that kind of resolves everything that's left hanging in the first book. So if you like Sparrow, he really needs to read that second book. And then I have become really interested in two authors, Philippa Gregory. She writes about women who are otherwise lost in history, and I've been primarily focusing on the Tudor court, the royal line in England in the 15th and 16th century, leading up to Henry VIII and Elizabeth I. And then I was introduced to Margaret George, who has written a book about Elizabeth I. And then I also read her book on Mary Magdalene, and they're both wonderful authors, and they're historical novels, but they're very, very detailed, and I've just become engrossed in them. I pick one up and I find that 3 hours later I've been lost in the book.
Oh, Dorothy, it sounds great. And again, going to that idea of both powerful female writers, but also powerful female characters. Thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it. Nessa is on the line with us from Reigate Corner. Hi, Nessa. What are you reading?
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say hats off to the librarians. You are my heroes.
Thank you.
I have three recommendations. Going back to your comments about memoir, a particularly intelligent and humorous memoir is Craig Ferguson, stand-up comedian and former host of The Late Late Show, wrote a book called American on Purpose, The Improbable Adventures of an Unlikely Patriot, which is about his becoming an American citizen. He's Scottish. About his becoming an American citizen in 2008. And particularly with what's going on in general now, this book is quite, in addition to being funny, but it's also gives us another view of what it is to be an American from someone who dearly wanted to become one. And, for example, in part of his book, he points out that we must never mistake disagreement between Americans on political or moral issues to be an indication of their level of patriotism. We are not just a nation. We are not an ethnicity. We are a dream of justice that people have had for thousands of years. So that's quite a different view from a lot of our discontent at this particular point. And very, very well written. I highly recommend it.
Nessa, thank you for that recommendation. Really appreciate it. Craig Ferguson's memoir. Let's get one more in here for, before the break. Terry is calling in from Brattleboro. Lots of Brattleboro callers today. Hi, Terry.
Hi. And hi, Star.
Hi, Terry.
yeah, I would like to recommend a book by Joyce Carol Oates, We Were the Mulvaneys. This book got me through January. It's about a fairly large Yankee farm family in Upper State New York. And if you're from a fairly large Yankee family like myself, or you're curious about country Yankee home life, I recommend it. The character development is wonderful, but it's poignant. It's authentic. It's bittersweet. It includes class politics, small town politics, gender politics, which makes this charming book take a real turn at one point. But it's so authentic and so well written, and the character development is just enchanting. And I strongly suggest this book as a Yankee myself.
Terry, thank you for that. Appreciate it. More emails coming in as well. Crystal says, here are two books that I want to recommend. The first is Hope in the Dark, Untold Histories and Wild Possibilities by Rebecca Solnit, a real boon in these dark political times we find ourselves in. And Crystal says, the second is Hand to Mouth, Living in Bootstrap America by Linda Tirado. She discusses what it's like to be one of this country's working poor. Even though she's talking about a very serious subject, poverty, her wit and insights make for a truly enjoyable and entertaining read. And Crystal has a P.S. She says, P.S. My 9-year-old son would like to recommend Diary of a Wimpy Kid and Double Down by Jeff Kinney. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about family reads, maybe books for kids that are great, and anything else you want to talk about. Our number is 1-800-639-2211, or post a recommendation on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. More reading, always more. We're talking books this hour with Amy Howlett, Library Director at Springfield Town Library, and with Star Latronica, Library Director at Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro, and with you. Call 1-800-639-2211. It's 1-800-639-2211. Or post your reading recommendations on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I love hearing so many great recommendations. It's so much fun for me. Sandra says, this time of year, finding garden picture books is a must. And I think for some people, reading the seed catalogs is also an appealing thing to do at this time of year. Megan says, this book is one that will stay with me forever. However, Boys on the Boat is a story about the U.S. rowing team headed to the Olympics in Germany under Hitler in the 30s. The background of each of the men is beyond belief. That's the best part of the book. The historical background adds so much dimension to a heartwarming story of the team. Highly recommended. Brian says, I'm working my way through Archer Mayer's Joe Gunther series and enjoying every one of them. I'm about halfway through the 28 or so books, and I usually alternate them with a variety of other books. So thank you very much for your suggestions. We got another local author recommendation from Victoria, who says, Before the Court of Heaven by Jack Mayer, true story blended with fictional characters with a view into the German politics and the rise of Hitler, a great read. My mind may be deceiving me, but I think we actually talked to Jack Mayer about that book, so we'll try to see if we can tweet out or post a link to that interview. Joseph is responding to yesterday's show about coyote hunting and says, I'd like to recommend a book that relates directly to the discussion. The book is Coyote America by Dan Flores. It explores the natural history of the coyote and the cultural influence from the role of Old Man Coyote in Turtle Island spirituality to the late beat writers who identified with coyote as a trickster hero. The central topic is the history of American public policy and the attempt to eradicate wolves and coyotes, along with the research that revealed the flaws of that policy, along with current thinking on best practices for public policy. And boy, we are still getting comments on yesterday's show about coyote hunting. Hundreds of them have come in. So clearly that hit a nerve. I appreciate that recommendation, Joseph. Star Latronica, another recommendation from you, if you don't mind.
All righty. Well, do we want to go into children's books now?
Yeah, let's do it.
All righty. So winter is a wonderful time to share books as a family. And I can't recommend this highly enough. It really gives everybody in the family some common ground. And for my family, you know, we developed a whole kind of family folklore language that goes around with books that we've shared forever. You know, that if anybody had a substitute teacher and came home and said, "Oh, yeah, we had a substitute today," we'd always say, "Well, I hope it wasn't Miss Swamp." And so it really does bring people together. And I read a recent article that said, you know, it's one of the most effective conversations to have multigenerationally. Mm-hmm. And how a grandmother had, you know, would call her grandson and ask how school was, and he'd say, "Fine." But then one day she asked him what he was reading, and he said, "The Hunger Games." And so she went out and got a copy. And now they have these wonderful, spirited, animated conversations every week over what they're reading together. So just putting that plug in there. And also because reading aloud, we all love to be read to. You know, I went to see David Sedaris once, and really he just read to us, and it was lovely. And so for parents and kids to read to each other, you know, give kids a chance to read to you too. So my colleague, Matt, actually reminded me of the Susan Cooper series, The Dark is Rising. And that's a wonderful series for this time of year. And it is. It's the ultimate showdown between good and evil. It's a series of five books. But it happens within the real world, even though it's filled with fantastic creatures. It does take place within the real world. And it's and the kids are the heroes. So that's a great one to share as a family.
The book we're sharing as a family, I have a three-year-old and a baby, and we're reading A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh stories, which I actually never – I don't think I ever read them as a kid or had them read to me. And I thought, boy, these are going to be really boring for our son because they're long and some of the language. And he just sits and loves it and finds them, I think, perhaps maybe soothing, and walks around our house saying, "Tut, tut, looks like rain." So, you know, we're having those kinds of conversations too.
Right? I know. And you will. You know, when he's a teenager, he'll say that.
Oh, good.
And think about that wonderful legacy, the miracle of language, rich, deep language, not always immediately understood, but, you know, you're turning that kid into a wonderful writer and talker and thinker when you read a book like that together.
It is awfully fun, too, to hear what your children start, you know, sort of parroting back or interpreting from the things that they're hearing even before they can read. Let's go to Isaac calling in from South Burlington. Hi, Isaac. Nice to hear from you. What are you thinking?
Well, could I ask you first, when you read Winnie the Pooh and you come to one of the songs, do you sing it or you just recite it like a poem?
I sing it. And if it's one that I know from a movie, I can sing the tune. Otherwise, I make up a different tune every time.
Yeah, I always had to improvise. So I guess I have two sorts of recommendations because I have kind of a double life. I teach in the English department at UVM, and I also edit and publish a comic book. Although probably when I say comic book, it's not like what you might initially imagine. I'll talk about the comic first because it's all ages, and it's something that ties into talking about reading along with kids. It's a book called Cartosia Tales that is a all ages fantasy series that is all set in a fantasy world called Cartosia, and each issue has nine different stories set in different parts of the world map, and as we move from one issue to the next, all the cartoonists get shuffled around, so they can't draw the same characters in issue two that they drew in issue one. And you wind up seeing the characters drawn by a bunch of different people, and you see their stories sort of change as different people's attention gets focused on them. So it's pretty fun. We've published nine issues of it so far, and it's not, you know, it's not easy to find, I suppose, but they have it at the comic store on Church Street, and they also, well, you can get it from our website, which is cartosia.com, spelled with a C like it sounds. But I really like it. I mean, I like publishing it. I like seeing the stories come in from the cartoonists, and I like reading it with my son. We try to keep it all ages in a way that is smart, like rather than dumbing it down and throwing in pop culture references for the grown-ups. We tend to think that kids respond to a good reading challenge. And I remember as a kid enjoying books that were kind of pitched over my head.
Yeah.
And then kind of growing into them. So that's sort of what I was trying to do with these books is write and draw something.
Well,
it's really complex and rich.
And Isaac has sent me the artwork, and it's pretty stunning. So thank you for sharing that idea with us, Isaac. It's Cartosia Tales. You know, we're talking about kids' works, and we got a note from Bruce in Essex who emailed his recommendation in poem form. And he says, even though my name is Bruce, I've hardly read any Dr. Seuss. So last week, riding in my car, I tuned the dial to VPR. Some guy was talking about the Lorax, which I thought was a soap named Borax. Silly me went and found the book and gave it more than just a look. The Lorax was a gentle old gent trying to save the environment. It's a lesson we're all really needing, and the book itself is awful good reading. So, my friends, here's my plea. Go read the book, then hug a tree.
Oh, my gosh. Bravo. That is
well
so
done.
Wonderful.
I know. Bruce, how long did that take you? We didn't give the promo out for this show until yesterday, so I hope he, you know, that must have just sprung to mind. I love that. That's so great. Isaac, I think, was also mentioning fantasy, and Andrew Liptak of Geek Mountain State recommends The Bear and the Nightingale by Catherine Arden. He says it has a local connection. Arden currently lives in Vermont and has been getting quite a bit of acclaim for this debut novel. It's a retelling of Russian myths and history. And Andrew says Vermont author Brian Staveley, who wrote several epic fantasy novels, is returning in April with a standalone adventure in that world, Skullsworn, which is excellent. Another Vermont author, Daniel Mills, has a new book coming out in April, Mariah, which is set after the American Civil War and involves cults in the hills of Vermont. And then Andrew says some other great science fiction and fantasy books to pick up that have come out recently are Cameron Hurley's The Stars Are Legion and The Fortress at the End of Time. I love those recommendations. Amy, it's your turn, kids book or otherwise, whatever you're thinking.
Oh, I want to give a shout out to David Budbill. We're losing so many wonderful Vermont authors. David Budbill, of course, wrote poetry and novels and a play. But the book that I love him the most for is Bones on Black Spruce Mountain. Two 13-year-old boys go camping. They climb a mountain, and they're chasing down a local story that a foster boy died up there, and his bones are buried on Black Spruce Mountain. The book came out in 1978. It feels a little bit dated to me, but I love the relationship between the two boys. I love the woodcraft. They're camping out. They're building a hemlock bed. There's an old French-Canadian who talks to them before they go. Just a wonderful evocation of what it's like to be outdoors in the summer, looking from the mountain down over the farms.
Mm-hmm.
Good read aloud, too. The two boys are 13, but be a great book for a family to try together.
You know, David Budbill's poetry would also be fun to read as a family. He has a really interesting connection to fame and what he both wants and doesn't want, and I bet that could spark some really interesting discussion. Let's get one more call in while we can. Michael is on the line with us from Montreal. Hi, Michael. Go right ahead.
Hi, how are you today?
Well, thank you.
Good. So I'd like to recommend a book called Conclave, written by an author by the name of Robert Harris. Excuse me. Believe it or not, it's a mystery that takes place. Conclave is Italian for with key, and this is where all the cardinals get locked up in a room so they can elect a new pope. So it's interesting because it takes you through the whole process of how they do it. And it is actually a mystery. It was so good, I did it in one reading.
Oh, Michael, that's a great recommendation. Conclave is the book. I appreciate hearing that. Amy Howlett, Starletronica, I have a correction to make. I just got a note from my father who says, just because you don't remember having Winnie the Pooh read to you as a child doesn't mean it didn't happen. So I apologize. We're all about truth here, and I want to make sure that we're making sure that we are spreading the truth. I am so sorry to say that's all the time we have, because this has been such a fun hour. I really appreciate your enthusiasm for books. Amy Howlett is Library Director at Springfield Town Library in Springfield. Starletronica is Library Director at Brooks Memorial Library in Brattleboro. Thank you so much to both of you, and happy reading.
Thank you,
Jane. Thank you.
And listeners, you can continue to have this conversation at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition. We'll try to get up as many of the books that we talked about with callers up there this afternoon so that you can see what we talked about. And of course, anything that's come in the comments section, you'll be able to find as well. So appreciate your book recommendations. Happy reading to all of you. Now, that is our show today. After a long, intemperate political campaign, how might it impact the way our children interact with one another? Tomorrow, we're going to take a look at bullying in general and specifically at the climate these days. We're also going to discuss what laws and policies are in place to protect Vermonters from being bullied. You can send your questions or comments about bullying to Vermont Edition at vpr.net, and then be sure to tune in live tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.